I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I hope everybody's doing well today. I want to welcome everybody to the Unimpressed podcast. And I'm unimpressed that Goldie dressed up today for the podcast. He came in, he's looking good. And welcome, Jefferson Goldie. I'm glad you dressed up, buddy. Thanks. What's going on today?
I'm always dressed up, man. Just becoming a big guy doesn't mean I know how to dress. I was actually voted best dressed in high school. Fun fact.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I saw some old pictures, man, about you in a tux, and you were a little bit bigger.
My heaviest, I was like 560 pounds, and that photo was taken at my brother's wedding, and they had to make me like a special vest. Like, I was embarrassed, and for my first time in my life, and I don't get embarrassed easily.
Yeah.
But to show up at my brother's wedding that it has nothing to really do with me, and I'm making him look like, you know, I had to do something about it, man. Definitely.
When you were that big, how was your day? I mean, could you move? Could you get around? Could you move good? I mean, what was going on with that?
That's the thing, John. I was always a healthy, big, fat kid. I don't know why. Anytime I would go to the doctor, he would tell me the same thing. I'm the healthiest fat guy he's ever met. So I really had no reason to lose weight besides fitting in a booth, you know, or just fitting on an airplane seat, stuff like that, which the normal person doesn't really think about.
When you played baseball, you told me you played baseball. How big were you when you played ball?
I was probably a little smaller than I am right now. So I was probably definitely in the 300s. But I've always been a big dude, man. But I can hit the ball like 400 feet. I just couldn't run to save my life. So, You know, that's just why that didn't work out. As a pitcher, I pitched a perfect game one night. Couldn't throw that fast, you know, 84, 85. It's like Greg Maddux, paint the corners.
And was baseball your favorite sport?
Yeah. My dad was actually drafted by the Cubs, Chicago Cubs. And I'm guessing that's where I got my genes from. You know, he was actually a musician as well. Quick story about that. He got my mom pregnant at 16 years old. And they invited him to the farm system to play for the Cubs to pitch. But he just got my mom pregnant and he decided not to go. So Anytime we are all together, Christmas dinners, Thanksgiving, we bring that up. I give him some hell about it. Like, you couldn't wait, mom, 6 months for dad to come back from a farm? We would have been fine. Who knows?
So today, I mean, you came down from Chicago. We're in Charleston, South Carolina, and you were doing some content. You started working with us. And tell me a little bit about your past. And I know you did some stuff with the Food Network. Tell me a little bit about that.
I got into content creation. I've always wanted to create. I've always been on a creative mind, whether it be, you know, playing baseball is pretty creative for me. I don't know. It's just like another art form. I can never work your normal 9-to-5 job. Always had these huge dreams just growing up. And one day I won a contest to be a TV host in Chicago. And that market's, it's huge. It's a huge market. So they gave me my first opportunity on TV. I actually went to school for radio. So you just never know where you're going to end up in life. And then everything started to trickle from there. You know, I started making funny videos and Food Network happened. One of my guilty pleasures called Worst Cooks in America. It's exactly what a show sounds like. Worst Cooks in America. And it's a legit show.
So, I mean, that's interesting that they would make a show about bad cooks.
Yeah, it's entertainment at the end of the day, right? It's an entertainment show. People ask me all the time, hey, can you really cook? Are you bad at cooking? I'm like, yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
terrible at it, but they also are looking for personalities because it's at the end of the day, it's a TV show. Mm-hmm. So everybody's got some sort of acting background. Just because you're an actor doesn't mean you're a chef, you know?
Yeah. Well, was there a certain line of information on how they cast that show?
So the casting process took about 3 months. Everything was done over the internet. You had to make a YouTube video creating your worst dish or something that I thought was actually cooked. I cooked lasagna hamburgers with fries, and the video's out there somewhere. And you see me making a lasagna from scratch, and I put like Kraft single cheese on top of it. They're like, why did you do that? And my thought process was like, well, because it holds all the cheese together in the meat so it don't fall out. Like, yep, be like you. You're a part of the show. So that's how that happened.
And it was a what now?
Do you know how lasagnas are kind of like shaped? But I made it into like a cheeseburger. So I had onions in there. I had mustard, ketchup. So my version of lasagna was more of a cheeseburger lasagna.
Cheeseburger lasagna.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it? It wasn't any good?
It was disgusting. Yeah. And my wife had to try it on camera. And she was trying her sweetheart to not be mean to me. She's like, you know, it's cooked. I'm like, yeah, it was bad.
And you've done a few other things in Chicago. And you grew up in Chicago, right?
North side of Chicago, right across the street from Wrigley Field. And I love it. I love the city. I grew up around Second City. It's a huge comedy scene in Chicago. Some of my favorite artists, Chris Farley, Tina Fey, Steve Carell, all graduated from the same school. And I told myself one day I'm going to go to that school, but I was just so heavily involved with music. Didn't happen earlier in my career.
You remember Lonnie Smith?
No, I don't.
Did Reggie Sanders play for the Cubs for a little
while? Reggie Sanders? No.
Yeah, he didn't play for the Cubs. I was thinking there's two guys I played with back in the day.
Oh, really?
At Spartanburg Methodist Junior College.
Nice. What did you play?
I played center field. Was 185, run a 6.760. I used to be fast.
Not me, buddy.
But I worked out with Reggie. Me and Reggie were very similar. I used to work out with Reggie every day in fall ball.
Nice, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's a couple years older than me.
Lonnie Smith, did you
Lonnie
say?
Lonnie Smith.
Yes, now my name rings a bell. Yes.
Lonnie went to Spartanburg Methodist. He was way older than me. He kind of paved the path for the Spartanburg Methodist ball players. I mean, they had Mookie Wilson before him or whatever. Nice. But there's a little bit of tradition right here in Spartanburg, South Carolina with, you know, pro athletes because I think we were the number one junior college team in the country when I was there.
And that's the thing, man. People look at me and you're like, yo, he can't be any good. You know, they see this big old body and I'm on a basketball court, too. Do not leave me open because I'm shooting a three, but I can't play defense to save my life. But I'm good on offense. It's weird. You know, it was always like that for me.
So how long you been married?
I've been married going on 6 years this year. But the thing is, she was my first girlfriend ever. At the age of 13, we started dating, you know. And after we got into high school, we kind of went our separate ways, but we remained friends our whole lives. We would wish each other happy birthday whenever our birthdays come around. It was all about timing, man. 10 years later, we got back together and now we're married.
You've had this drive of entertainment, you know, wanting to do entertainment, being a personality. What's your passion? And I mean, what's driving you to do this?
I want people to know something about me, Laura. If you ever come to see me outside of anything doing videos, I'm the same person that I am on camera, off camera. And a lot of people always, when they notice that, makes me feel good because I feel like I'm trying to just be authentic as I can. And at the end of the day, if I can make someone laugh or make someone's day or even inspire them to lose weight, even though I'm still a big dude, I don't know how many messages I get that I inspire people, which is crazy. So to get to your question, I just want to inspire and make people laugh. That's it.
That's it. It's make
it.
People laugh.
Yeah.
And did you, living in the area you did in Chicago, did you go to a lot of shows in the area of comedy shows? And
not really. That's the thing. I grew up about two or three blocks from the world famous Second City, and I never stepped foot in there until maybe 4 years ago. And now, you know, I did the improv scene there. They gave me my own show at Second City because of the pandemic. Everything had to, you know, get scrapped. But we're working back at it, man. And doing improv is just, it's a whole nother level. It's great. I love it.
So that is like a play setting, the improv. I mean, tell me a little bit about that structure of setting up a show. It's a little bit different than doing videos for social or doing content for television. Tell me a little bit about how you prepare and what you do for improv.
So for me, I always try to be a leader. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being a follower, being a team leader. I'm always the one putting bands together, getting in my improv team together, you know, just building a community around me. So I put this improv team together, and it's all about the ensemble, man. If you have good connection with other people, your show is going to flow. It's all about having each other's backs, too. If you fail, there's no failing in improv, right? That's what they say. It's just accidents. And if you just got to pick yourself up, man. So it's great. The Chicago scene for comedy is huge. People ask me all the time, hey, why don't you get into stand-up comedy? I don't think I'm not passionate about that. So I don't know if I'll ever do that. Even though I think I have some good stories to tell. So
people throw these words around and they're kind of generalized. What is the difference between an improv actor and a comedian?
Sure. Comedians usually have bullet points. They're storytellers. They're scripted sometimes where you're practicing your set. And it's usually the same set. If you're on tour, 30 dates. Yeah, you're mixing up some words here and there, but it's the same formula. For improv, we go in there blinded. We have no plan. We ask for suggestions on stage. They'll throw some things at us, and we're making a completely made-up scene on the spot. So, for example, my team, we're called NSYNC, and we do 90s improv. So everything suggested is 90s related. So, like, what's your favorite spot to go when you were in 1992? Blockbuster. So now we're doing a scene in Blockbuster renting, you know, Titanic. And we're trying to make it funny on the spot, just creatively.
And when you're interacting with another improv actor, do you recognize when you fumble on words, or how do y'all get past a mistake?
So for me, I love messing up on stage. And a lot of people will get scared of that or terrified, like, oh, no, I just messed up. For me, if I fumble a word, I'll look in the crowd and I'll break that fourth wall. Like, I didn't mean to say that word, you know, and I usually get a laugh out of that. You know, it's just about handling the situation. But if you mess up, you know, that's again, I got your back. What he meant to say was, and we started.
And you do that right there on stage.
Right on the spot, man. And a lot of people go improv just to get better communication skills. If, you know, if you're working at a high stress job, just if you're public speaking, a lot of people take improv. I suggest everybody at least try it once, man. It's great.
It's kind of a thought, then reaction type of deal.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like a 3D reaction, if you will, something like that. Would you consider it a 3D reaction?
Even if there's no wrong answer. So if you say something to me and we're going in a scene and I'm going this way, you're going that way, it's fine. Like, yeah, we're not on the same page, but it's all made up. So like, it doesn't matter.
And you hear people talk about third and fourth wall. What is a third and fourth wall?
I don't know what a third wall is. I guess that would be just me and you talking right now.
Yeah.
The fourth wall is people off the camera that no one can see. So if I'm sitting here with you right now and something comes up and then I look over to your editors and producers, I'm like, hey, did you hear that? That's breaking the fourth wall because you're not supposed to do that.
Right? Oh, okay. Yeah. Breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. So improv in Chicago, how many shows have you done?
Under my belt right now, I probably got a close about 30 shows. Yeah. And I've never done improv before. And I was like the team leader, I guess you could say. So I'm the one that's coming up right in the stage when the curtains open, getting the crowd pumped, explaining what the show is about to be about. And again, I've always just had that, like, I always want to be in front of the camera.
I can see you like Pavarotti, you know, with that little Italian side in you. Yeah, it's very operatic. Improv is somewhat operatic.
It's very theatrical.
But it's not singing, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are games where you sing. Yeah. So, like, for example, me and my, like, you gotta pick a good crew as well. Like, you trust. So it was me and two other girls, and one of the suggestions, I don't know, we will say it was salad. We're making up a song singing about salad right now. And I can't rhyme to save my life either. I'm the worst rapper. I'm a good musician, but I can't rap to save my life. I don't know how those guys do that.
Well, and you don't make any money in improv, really.
Nah, there's not a lot of money to be made. It's all ticket sales. But the thing is, we did sell out every show we've done. So you make some, not a lot. You do this, you do that for the passion and fun and connections with the people, man. I've met some of my best friends at improv, 100%. Because everybody's like on the same wavelength thinking creatively. Like, you want to be around those people, man. You want to surround yourself around positive people. Yeah. You'll be a lot happier at the end of the day.
Are you going to continue doing improv?
I am. Once I get back home, we still have a show offered to us. It's just a lot of people are maybe a little more scared right now because we haven't been doing improv. But again, you don't really lose that skill. So we'll be okay. We'll see what happens.
The place you were doing improv has been shut down pretty much for the pandemic.
Yes, sir. It just opened back up. I want to say this week, actually.
Well, outside of that, you had some more highlights. We talked about the Food Network. What other things have you done in this entertainment space?
Best thing I've done recently was go to Japan. It was a weight loss documentary show. So they actually flew me out here to South Carolina, and I had to meet with the producers and directors, see if they liked me. And the very next 2 days later, they flew me out to Japan. And the whole premise was kind of like the Real World. Okay. It was the Real World for documentaries. So they bring me to Japan, four Americans, and they put us on an all Japanese diet cuisine. And they see if we can lose weight compared to American diets, which is obviously going to happen. So I ended up losing about 60 pounds out there in 2 months. And it was, man, the Japanese people are just on another level, man. They're so structured out there. It's crazy.
And what was the diet?
It was mostly like seafood, a lot of fish, very little carbs. But you're eating, they fed us like 4 or 5 times a day. And the portions weren't small either. You would think, oh, just little small portions. They got to figure it out over there, man. And it was delicious. I had fish pancakes for breakfast. You would think that's disgusting.
Yeah.
It was good.
What kind of place did you stay in? I know the hotel rooms and all that are kind of small.
They rented out a house for us. So it was like the Real World, literally. Like, it was all of us sleeping in one roof, you know. I don't like sleeping with other people like that, so it was kind of hard for me. Mm-hmm. You know, we have these big other people that you hear snoring in the other rooms. You know, we're fat. What do you want? We snore, fat people.
I'll say big people and be politically correct here. How many big people were in the room?
There was 5 of us.
5.
Yeah, we each had our own rooms. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But I'll give you a quick story what happened just why when I say the Japanese people are on a whole different wavelength. I lost my wallet in Tokyo. Okay, it was the first week I was there. I had $4,000 in my wallet and my passport. And I lost it first day I was there in Tokyo. And the translator that we had with us there was like, oh, don't worry, Jefferson, we'll find it. I'm like, oh, what are you talking about? My wallet's gone. I got to call my wife. You got to figure something out. She's like, no, we'll come back Monday. So this was happening on a Friday. We got to come back on Monday. I'm like, okay. So she takes us to this little police station. Wallet was there. And all my money was there. My passport's there. Along with a letter that read, no need to reach out and say thank you. Just want to help out a foreigner. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, if you lose your wallet here or anything like that in America, I mean,
it's gone.
Maybe they'll send it back with your credit cards. Maybe. But the money, that's gone. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, come on.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was.
And how long were you out there doing this show?
Two and a half months.
2.5 months. Yeah. Wow. What'd you do during the day?
They would take us to these exotic rainforests and then hills and mountains for another story. Did you know there's hotels in mountains? I didn't. And this mountain is the biggest one in Japan. And to get up there, originally how they explained it, because they don't speak that great of English. So there was a little bit of a, you know, barrier. She was like, we got to take a trolley this way. But she, you know, the one that would swing like a lift, like a ski lift.
Yeah.
So you're like, you mean to tell me you're going to take us up this huge mountain? And I'm like, it's not happening. I'm like, get me off the show. I'm not going. I'm afraid of roller coasters. So that's number one. Uh-huh. But then it was a trolley. It just went up kind of slow. And like, oh, okay, I'll do that. But still, it was terrifying. 20,000 feet in the air. We're going like this. You can see behind us, like the little oh, man. It was really? Terrifying. But
up
it was
inside of a mountain.
It was inside of a mountain. But at the end of the day, I'm so glad I did it. Best experience I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
And this was in Tokyo?
There's some other part of Japan. We went all around. They would do that every other day. We'll have some rest days. And then they would make us, you know, work out a little bit here and there. But other than that.
And where did this, has this been released? Has it aired?
They aired in Japan to about 40 million people. They said, apparently I'm really famous in Japan. Didn't air in here, but I found a link And I downloaded it's in Japanese. Like they overdubbed my voice and everything. It's hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, it's out there somewhere. It's called Diet Japan, if you guys really are interested in trying to find that.
So they wanted to find big people.
Yeah.
So they come to America to find the big people.
Yeah, of course.
That's an interesting thought process, you will.
There was one from me from Chicago, one was from LA, Georgia, and I think Florida.
And what did they pay you for this?
It was pretty good. They paid me about $10,000 to do it.
Free place to stay and food. Free place to
stay, food, first class flight. I mean, Japan, it was on my bucket list anyway.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Would you go back to Japan?
I would love to. I wanted to go back for 2020, the Olympics. I was talking to our translator out there, but then obviously, you know, that 2020 hit. But I definitely want to go back to Japan just as a vacation, you know, to have fun. And the people are the nicest people in the world there, man. So nice.
And how many things, this is something I know, trying to be, trying to have a voice, trying to be in front of the camera, trying to express yourself. How many things have you been to, like castings or so forth, that you've got no's?
Everything I've ever done on TV or radio, I've done without an agent.
Okay.
Worst Cooks in America, my TV show, the Japan stuff, all, I never had an agent. You're so, you know, stereotyped my size. You're going to always be the funny fat guy or the big friend that's fat in any movie, commercial, TV show. And you would think there's not a lot of us, but the competition for someone that looks like me, it's a lot harder, you know, just because the roles are so limited. So I went out recently for a commercial and I'm looking at the sides and I'm like, this is not me. Doesn't look like me. They're not. So I've been told no a lot, was mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say.
And only reason I say that, everybody gets told no. Absolutely. And I think if somebody's listening to this and someone who's trying to get into the business, and you're probably going to get 80% no's before you get any yeses.
Exactly.
FYI.
When people ask me that, I always say, don't wait. Just do it yourself. You know, always try to create your own content. Don't wait for an agency. You know, that's what I've been doing. It helps. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm getting more auditions for stuff that I wasn't able to do. Mm-hmm. But I've been told no. Oh yeah. I've been shot down hundreds of times.
What's your everyday life in Chicago?
I have a normal job.
Uh-huh.
Somewhat. I work overnights. I work from midnight till 8 a.m. at a high rise downtown Chicago, very congested area, but I've been there for almost 20 years, man. And the reason being, I love being there because it's just me. I'm alone and all my creative juices flows at like 2-3 a.m. you know? So I like it. And that's,
and what do you do?
It's concierge. Like,
okay.
You know, someone needs help finding a, you know, a nice place to eat a steak or a show. That's what I'm here for.
So you're kind of like a tour guide too in Chicago. Yeah. So you know where all the spots are. Where do you send them to for the best Italian restaurant?
Olive Garden.
Olive Garden.
I like sending them to Jake Melnick's is a nice place. Giordano's for pizza. Lou Malnati's. Morton Steakhouse, Gibson's. Yeah, I know all the places.
Giordano's, I think we ate there when we were in town. That's kind of a famous Chicago pizza place, right?
A lot of people think that Chicago's more deep dish.
Yeah.
Not the real Chicago people. We like our pizza thin crust, man. Super thin, crunchy, well done. Yeah.
With the oil dripping off.
Yeah, man. That's New York.
Yeah, that's us. Right? That's New York. That's what we look for. When some of the old heads and the traditional people moved out of these neighborhoods, you kind of start losing that. You know.
Oh yeah.
You don't get that good pizza anymore like you used to back in the day. Do you still have? I mean, I know there's still a few spots, but it's not like it used to be. Same.
No, absolutely not. There's still a few mom and pop shops that I'd rather go to than your normal chain pizza any day. And I'm gonna send you something. I'm gonna send you and Tyler something too. And Gordo, we already talked about it.
And you got the lake out there?
Yeah, man, Lake Michigan. I drive by it every night. One of the best drives. No, if you're from Chicago and you're listening to this, you know there's no other drive than the Lakeshore Drive. It's beautiful, breathtaking.
What's up with the blue water? Why does the water seem like a bluish aqua tint?
Does it?
You ever notice that?
Not really. I mean, in the water?
Yeah.
In Lake Michigan?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe because all the buildings around it, like the reflection. It's the only thing I got.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very weird, like, tint.
Like an aqua tint.
You know, it was different for a lake. Because we did a lot of shows there. We did some shows in Schaumburg.
Schaumburg
Improv. And nice. We'd go around town and check everything out. Yeah, I always wonder why that had the aqua bluish tint.
I wish I had a better answer for you.
You're supposed to be the concierge.
You know what I'm saying? I suck at my job, John.
So what if somebody, how about if somebody comes in, they say, hey, Goldie, what's a good place to go see a show? Obviously, there's been no shows with the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Chicago's shut down.
I'm usually sending them to Second City. Yeah, there's comedy shows, there's improv shows, there's theaters, there's actual plays. So it's like it's a school. So like you learn to do comedy there. Some of my favorite people in the world have played the same stages that I've been on. And it's awesome knowing that feeling. You know, Chris Farley, me and him hosted on the same show, same stage. You know?
Really?
It's great.
Now, you have a big Italian family?
Yes, very big. Whenever there's like a funeral, birthdays, weddings, 300-400 people. And it's weird. Like growing up, when someone would pass away, I would go, he's a little kid. I'm 13 years old, 12 years old, and all these people are partying. I'm like, this guy just died. Like, why are you guys partying? And now I understand why. We mourn, you know, there, but we party for their life after.
Uh-huh.
So we usually rent out a huge, big banquet hall and go for days.
What's the meals and the food look like when the family gets together?
A lot of carbs, John. A lot of carbs, a lot of Italian food, a lot of breads and cakes. It's not good, but it's good.
Now they have the sauce, the good sauce, tomato sauce. Yeah, and
call it gravy.
Yeah, right? the gravy. Yeah. Nice gravy.
Yeah, man. Sunday dinners, that's a real thing in Italian households, man.
I was the guy, grew up in North Carolina and show up to the dinners, but you know, my grandmother used to cook on that side of the family. She would cook. They'd have breakfast, right? And then between breakfast and lunch, they put out cookies with the coffee.
Exactly. Cakes.
Then you have the salami and
cheese.
The salami and cheese sandwich for lunch.
Okay, so you already know.
Right? And then she'll put something else between after lunch to dinner. Right?
You sound like that was my grandma.
Yeah. And then when you have dinner, it's pasta, I don't know, 85 different things for dinner.
Absolutely.
So you literally eat all day.
All day long, John.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. You're not right.
They eat all day. I mean, that culturally, where do you think that came from?
That's a good question, man. But anytime I would go over my grandma's house, even if I just had eaten and my parents, we cannot leave until we eat more. And that's how we grew up, man. Like, it's weird. Like, I don't think people are like that these days anymore. Like, even like my grandma today, she doesn't cook as much, and my parents. But back in the day, you're right, man. It was literally all around the clock. And people would just show up to your house, and they have to eat. My friends have to eat. Can I just get you something to eat? Can we get you a sandwich and a meatball? Like, we're good. We just ate. You know?
Get away from me. Yeah. I ate 2 hours ago or 30 minutes ago. And they're still trying to feed you. My grandfather, I don't know if this happened, he was Czech, right? And his brother married into, they were Czech, and they married into this big Italian family.
Yeah.
The Remicios. And the Remicios were from Sarno, Italy.
Okay.
And they were the only two Czechs, but their tradition was a little different. He would start drinking beer at 9 a.m., you know, because the Czechs like to drink. Now, any Italians in your family start drinking early in the morning?
My grandfather, he used to put them back, definitely. Yeah. But he was also an entertainer too, man. He was a singer. He sang with Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, all those guys.
Really?
Yeah, he was an amazing singer. But then, you know, unfortunately, one day he had throat cancer, and they had to put a little trachea in here. So he has to, whenever he speaks, he would have to hold the thing. That sucked to see him like that because he was such an amazing singer. But the drinking, it was it for him. He was a bad drinker.
That's what caused the throat issue. The drinking. He drank that much.
That much. I grew up in a house where you wake up with the smell of smoke and cigarettes. It was the worst thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I got this tattoo right here. I don't know if you guys can see it. No smoking sign.
No smoking.
Anytime I'm around someone that smokes, I'm going to start crying like instantly. I get sick for days. So I don't smoke, you know, but no more. Like I told my mom, if you ever want to see me come foot in this house again, because she always still wants me to come over. Like she treats me. I'm 13 years old.
Yeah. Hey, Goldie.
Yeah. Come on, baby. I miss you. Like, stop. I'm 38 years old, mom.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, stop smoking in the house and I'll come over more. And
she still smokes in the house?
She hasn't. No more. Which is good.
Oh, so she did stop.
She stopped. Yes.
Well, you think that only happens in, I think that only happens in Alabama.
Yeah.
Because I kid some of my comedians. I said, they all still smoke cigarettes, Marlboros down there. And I say, hey, y'all still think it's the 1980s.
My parents are old school like that. They don't even have cell phones. Like the really old school people. They don't know what's going on in the world. You know, like that's just how they are.
Well, that's good in a way.
I can see that. No, I envy them sometimes.
Your mind is a little more settled.
Yeah.
You know, with your life.
Yeah. They're not changing.
You don't have those extra vibrations of information.
That's true.
Comes from social media and all that kind of thing. So in a way that's really a good thing.
A lot of people have like this misconception of social media. It could be good. It could be bad. I'm here because Gordo Loco, we started talking over the internet years ago and he got me involved in this. And this is one example of how the internet could be a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know, social media brings people together. If you use it for the right, things in the right way, use it to your benefit. This is great.
And you got more shows airing on television as well, right?
The new season of Worst Cooks in America. It's an all-star reunion. So they're bringing back the best of the worst is what they're calling it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they brought me back for another season.
And how many episodes is that? Will we see you on?
I can't say how many episodes I was on because it's a reality show. It's a competition base. But I was on at least the first one.
We need to have them put up your... Well, I don't think they'd like to pick sides with social media, but put up your tagline there. But hopefully, if people are watching the show, they'll search you down and start following you with this new content you're making for us.
You know, I've always made content.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, I like making people smile and making people laugh. But also, sometimes you get a little lazy, you know, around, like, especially in the pandemic. People either flourished and, like, started making these new things, like, new opportunities, or you just kind of got lazy. At first, I built my own studio for podcasting. You know, I was all pumped. 6 months, 7 months later, I'm like, okay, I'm getting a little bored here. I got to get out this house. I'm going nuts. This is really cool.
We're happy. We're excited. I want to make this statement now. So in 10 years, we look back at this statement. I think this is the beginning of the new world of entertainment. Hollywood, to me, has not completely embraced the technology, you know, and they kind of still discredit some of the pieces of technology in the marketplace. So I'm stating that right now that I think this is the beginning of the new world entertainment. And I think people need to hold on. They need to hold on and catch on, because if they don't catch on, it's going to pass them by pretty quickly. And the reason I say that is I see my daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think these young kids who want to see their own content, create their own content, right? I think by the time they're older, right, they're going to be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
In their own little world and only view what they want to view. So they'll create these pockets of entertainment, right? And it won't be as much as a universal thing. Because if you look at the transition of 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, it was these ISOs of here's these 10 great comedians, here's these 10 great actors, right? Mm. But nobody's paying attention to that anymore. You're pulling in what you want to view.
It's true.
As an individual, right? And I think that's what people don't understand. And we're dealing with an ADD culture where it's everything's got to be quick, quick, quick.
And with us, like entertainers and social media people, influencers, we bring people into our lives like every day. Like you see behind the scenes, like literally us. People love Brad Pitt, but we don't know what the hell he's doing like on a Tuesday. You know, no one knows. He's making movies, which is great. It's just difference between like, you know, celebrity actors and people that are content creators. Totally different, but the same idea, you know.
Well, to me, talent is talent. Yeah. I don't care what the medium is. You show that talent. But I do think there's a paradigm shift on social that people are being recognized more that are on social media.
Yeah.
Right. Than they are being recognized in a television show that they spent $3 million for. So if you spend $3 million for a show that people don't see. And then you look at production costs that we're doing. What do you think is going to happen from a cost factor, from a business standpoint? what do you think is going to happen? It's a paradigm shift.
I think for me too. Like I'll follow, you know, a few celebrities here and there on Instagram and stuff. But again, they're not letting us into their daily lives too much. For me, for like a little kid, you know, they're seeing Logan Paul's every move, and they see him, and they see again like Brad Pitt next to him. They're going up to Logan Paul, you know. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Jefferson, I appreciate you coming down. I appreciate you coming in, doing some work this week, and getting some content done. And we'll get it out there for you, and just keep building, man, and see if we can do some good stuff, man.
Thanks for having me, man. It's been a great week. You, Gordo, everybody taking care of me. Tyler, I appreciate you guys. And I'm really excited to be part of this.
Seriously. Cool, man. Well, I appreciate that. This is Jefferson Goldie. Check him out. Google Jefferson Goldie. Follow him on Facebook, because that's our biggest platform. And I'm John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.